Hi, everybody. My name is Johnny, and I'm an alcoholic.
Hi, Johnny.
I'm glad to be here tonight. I'm glad to be sober. Glad to be in a gathering of Alcoholics Anonymous. I want to thank my friend Eric for extending the privilege of me participating in an Alcoholics Anonymous meeting. It's my opinion, I hope it always remains such, that it's some type of a privilege to be allowed to come and sit in these rooms. I hope I don't ever get it through my sick head that I have a right to everything that goes on in Alcoholics Anonymous, just because I was lucky enough to stumble in the room and get sober and stay that way. And the reason I tell you that is that everything in my life that's good and decent is the byproduct of the God I discovered sitting in meetings of Alcoholics Anonymous. Now, I'm extremely pleased tonight to be here fully clothed and in my right mind. I only tell you that because it seemed like the longer I stay sober, the more necessary it becomes for me to remember from whence I came. And I never want to forget that a little over 49 years ago, somewhere around in there, I came to in a cell in solitary confinement at a maximum security penitentiary, drifting in and out of total insanity. Now, because of a loving God who expressed himself through our program called Alcoholics Anonymous, it's no longer necessary for me to crawl around on my hands and eat like an animal. If I don't get nothing else out of that deal, I guess I could live that for a long time. It makes me feel good. Now, I'd like to stand here tonight and without a doubt tell you that that's where alcohol took me to. Oh, I'd love to be able to tell you that. That's where I took me to. The only thing that alcohol ever did in my life, it kept me alive long enough to get to Alcoholics Anonymous. I'm as sure as I'm standing here, if I hadn't taken a drink of alcohol, I'd have probably blown my brains out before I was 9 years old. I've always been some type of a misfit. I've always been somewhere out there trying to figure out how to get in here. And I didn't know what it was. There's always something odd about me. I believe I was born needing an answer. Now, the problem with that is I didn't know what was wrong with me. It's hard to seek the answer to a problem if you don't know what your problem is. And I don't know what's wrong with me. I'm restless, and I'm irritable, and I'm discontented. I don't like where I'm at. I don't like the feelings I got inside of me. I don't understand then, as I've come to understand in Alcoholics Anonymous, that those are the symptoms of the most deadly illness that's ever been known to mankind. My sponsor tells me that there's written history that stretches back almost 4,000 years about the illness alcoholism, and I have no reason to doubt that. But I don't know that. I know a lot about whiskey growing up. I came from a long, long line of Irish people. They had no religion to hold their guilt down, so they just went crazy, them people. I mean, they made whiskey and they sold whiskey and they did what people who make whiskey and get ready to drink whiskey do. I mean, Friday night at my people's house was warm-up night. I mean, they were just getting ready just to start to beat the hell out of one another. That's what they were going to do. And I guess the way they survived that, the way they figured that out is that whoever survived on Sunday was the king. I guess, and that, you know, that never seemed to bother me when I was growing up. I've always had type of a vicious, violent streak inside of me somewhere. And just, so violence never seemed to bother me. I was kind of, it's almost like having a spiritual experience when you kick somebody in the belly. You know what I mean? It's just wonderful kind of stuff. What bothered me with my family so much was, it's not what they did to one another when they were drinking, it's what they said to one another when they were sober. They would gather up on Wednesdays and put their arms around one another and say, we love one another because we're family. Now, I don't understand that because I just watched them beat each other up, steal each other's women, steal each other's whiskey. I watched them go to penitentiaries and work in them whorehouses on the other side of the track. I watched all that kind of stuff. I could not equate the two things. And I don't know whether that scarred me or not. It never came out on the therapist's couch. But I do know that I never uttered that word to another human being prior to coming to the program of Alcoholics Anonymous for a long time after I was here. It just was not in my vocabulary. I'm looking for a way out of this dilemma a long, long time before I ever came. I believe, personally, that my life has been one long series of searching for this answer for this thing that was bothering me. Now, you don't know where to look if you don't know what's wrong with you, so you start looking in various places. I looked up one day, saw my grandmother. She lived till she was 90 years old. She never took a drink of alcohol or smoked a cigarette in her life. My grandmother wouldn't think it's a big deal that I haven't had a drink of alcohol or a mood-altering chemical for over 46 years. Big deal, she'd say. I ain't had a drink for 90. I used to look at her and say, you ought to have a couple, Granny, make you feel better from time to time. My grandmother got everything she seemed to need out of life out of going to church. I used to watch her on Sunday morning, get up at this house that she lived in, where they used for a war zone. And she'd step across the bodies, and she'd put on the best thing she had, and she'd be gone for a couple hours. And when she came back, she was a little lighter in her step, a little easier in her being. Kind of danced around these people and cleaned them up and sang songs to Jesus. Now, I took a look at that, and I filed that in my keen alcoholic mind. And what it came out of that was that all I'm going to have to do is go where Grandma goes and do what Grandma does. I'd be like Grandma. But I'm not like my grandmother. See, my grandmother's not alcoholic. I didn't know that. So as a child, I went and sat in my grandmother's church with my grandmother and held my grandmother's hand and waited for it to happen, and it never happened. And I kept waiting for it to happen, and it never happened. And what I learned was that there was nothing wrong with my grandmother's church whatsoever, but there was something very wrong with the jackass sitting in it, me. What I'm doing in that church is what I've done all my life, prior to coming to Alcoholics Anonymous and for a long time after I was here, probably even a great deal of time today if you want to know the truth. I'm looking for something way out here to make me feel better in here, which only goes to prove to me that the problem has always been there. And what I found to take the sting out of it was a very simple thing. I sat on the back porch of my grandfather's house one day with my grandfather, and I'm watching him drink whiskey out of a fruit jar. He put it down, I picked it up and took a drink of it. And I don't know if there was any thought process about that. I don't remember about anything. I just remember doing it. And according to what I've learned in Alcoholics Anonymous through my own experiences here, the next couple of minutes of my life is what makes me an alcoholic anyhow. I'm not an alcoholic because I spent the next 20 years of my life creating mayhem out in the world. I'm an alcoholic because I have some type of an abnormal reaction to alcohol. Now, really not a bad reaction, if you want to know the truth. If it had been a bad reaction, you'd have another speaker here tonight. It was a good reaction. I get kind of tired hearing people badmouth whiskey, if you want to know the truth. It's just, I just hear them all the time talk about it. You know, I just want to go up there and hit them or something. I don't kick them off the podium or something. I don't know what it is. And stand up and say, "Hit!" I tell you, alcohol is the best friend I ever had, really. I mean, it still lingers in the back of my mind what a wonderful thing it is. Well, if you're alcoholic of my type, an alcoholic, you know, it's going to stick in the back of your mind forever and ever and ever. I hear people all the time saying things like, "Alcohol just quit working for me." My reaction to that is, "What the hell are you doing in a meeting?" The reason I keep coming to meetings of Alcoholics Anonymous is because I know alcohol will work. And being an alcoholic, if you put me in the wrong place at the wrong time in the wrong set of circumstances, I'm going to be drunk. It doesn't make any difference how many meetings I've gone to, how many people I sponsor. It doesn't make any difference how many times I've been through the book. You put me in the wrong place at the wrong time in the wrong set of circumstances, I'm going to be drunk. So it behooves me to find some type of a groove in Alcoholics Anonymous that's a safe and sane place for me to be. What happened to me when I took a drink of alcohol happened to me for the next 20 years every time I took a drink of alcohol. I took a drink of alcohol, and the Chinese philosophers wrote about it many years ago. I took a drink, and then the drink took a drink, and then the drink took me. Because 3 days later, I was pulled out from underneath a bridge and stood in front of a judge and sentenced to the Hutchinson State Reform School. 20 years later, I took a drink of alcohol. They pulled me out of a car in Compton and stood me in front of a judge and sentenced me to 20 years in the penitentiary. Now, that's what happened to me when I drank. I got drunk and went places. I had to travel around like that. I went from reform school to junior penitentiaries to nut houses. Now they call them treatment centers. They keep changing things to make it sound better, I guess. I don't know. I don't know. It's an amazing thing to me. Amazing thing to me how even during all that period of time, I never knew what was wrong with me. I just didn't know. I just didn't. Because I walked out of institutions from the time I was 9 or 10 years old until I was 30 years old. In and out all the time. Over a period of 20 years. And not one time did I ever say to myself, self, do you realize how long it's been since you've had a series of electroshock treatments? Why don't you have a drink? Why don't you have a drink of alcohol and go out there and kill your baby brother? Have a drink of alcohol and go out and stand on them street corners and join them gangs to commit them atrocities. Have a drink of alcohol and go out there and tear your mother's heart out one more time. Have a drink of alcohol and see, I'm an alcoholic. People like me do not take a drink of alcohol after being sober for a period of time to get drunk. Alcoholics don't really want to be drunk, you know. They don't have a drink to go out and have a party. They just take a drink of alcohol after being sober for a period of time just to go. But you see, if you're an alcoholic of my type, that's all it takes. Because the phrase in the book that cops it out, it says that once I take a drink, I have to take another drink. And then the drink takes a drink, and then I'm gone. And that's the story of my life. I'm sitting on a furlough from reform school when I'm 10 or 11 years old drinking a bottle of Marco Petri red wine. Most of you have never heard of Marco Petri red wine. I can tell. The reason I know you haven't because it was experimental stage of the Thunderbird. That's why you never heard of it. It never saw grape, but it'd get you. I'm drinking this stuff. I am kind of a unique individual in a way. Now, I didn't say I was different. I just said I was kind of unique. I started on cheap wine and worked down. And that ain't easy. But I'm sitting around with my little gang, and we're talking about being bad and acting bad. And we got our ducktail haircuts. We're just bebopping around there. You know, I don't know. I guess we're all scared to death. We're afraid somebody's going to find it out. And a guy tapped me on the shoulder and said, you ought to try these. And he gave me some pills. Now, I don't remember saying to him, what are those? Will they bother me if I take them? Yeah. I just took them. Thank God they weren't X-Lax. That's all I can tell you. I can just imagine what these attitude adjustment meetings in the morning would be like. One of those kind of problems. Just work. That's all I can tell you. Just work. It's like lighting the afterburner on a rocket ship. Only my rocket ship never took me up anywhere. My rocket ship took me right straight to hell. And if your hell's any hotter than where I've been, I pray God I don't ever go there. But I'm on the same street corner a couple of years later, and I'm hanging around my little gang, and we're doing this stuff, and we're acting like gangbangers, and we're doing what they write in newspapers about today, and we're doing all this kind of stuff, and a guy stuck a needle in my arm. And for the next 14 years of my life, I stuck needles in my arm in and out of institutions. That's what I do. I live out there in the streets, and I do what people like me who live in the streets do. I destroy every single thing that comes in contact with me. I'm like a plague. There's a reason for that, you see. I'm a taker. I'm a taker of things, and I'm a user of people, so therefore I'm a loser. I'm selfish, self-centered, I'm self-serving, I got an ego bigger than this whole building. My entire lifetime was spent before I came to Alcoholics Anonymous. For a long time after I was here, maybe even a great deal of time today, I really don't have a handle on it, without a conscious thought or a conscious concern for any other human being who lives upon the face of this earth. I'm not interested in you at all unless you've got something I want. Then when I get it, I cast you aside like so much trash and I go on about my business. That's the way I live my life. No, I didn't live my life like that one day or one week or till I got a court card. I lived my life like that from my earliest recollection of life until a long time after I was an Alcoholics Anonymous. At the ripe old age of 26 years old, somewhere around there, when I came to in that cell in solitary confinement and at maximum security penitentiary, there wasn't a single solitary soul left upon the face of this earth that would send me a penny postcard. They were all gone. you know what? They should be gone. I don't have any right to have anything good and decent in my life just because I got sober. Not at all. Everything that's good and decent in my life is the byproduct of the God that I discovered sitting in meetings with you. I'm not entitled to anything good in my life just because I got sober. Now, I'm not going to give any of it back. Believe that. But the things that are important to me today, you can only get from Alcoholics Anonymous. Those are the things that are most important to me. Not the things you buy, not the material possessions that you possess. The things that are most important to me today are the things that only Alcoholics Anonymous can bring about in the life of an alcoholic like me. I didn't know that day. I didn't have nothing, but that's what stumbled into your meetings of Alcoholics Anonymous. On the fourth day of November, 1959, I came to my first meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous. I saw you for the first time in my life. I was sitting in this penitentiary, and I saw some women walk across the yard. So I followed them into this old Quonset hut of a building. Now, I don't know why you came to Alcoholics Anonymous. I came to my first meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous over 48 years ago to smell perfume. I've been honking and sniffing around her ever since. I really don't care why you come to Alcoholics Anonymous. I hope you just stay here long enough to identify with the alcoholics. That's the only chance you have. Without the identification, you won't stay here. I wouldn't. You know, that may be the attraction that brought me to Alcoholics Anonymous, but I've been sober without any mood-altering chemicals of any nature in my system from that day to this day, and what I found out was that that's not what got me to Alcoholics Anonymous. See, my last time out, for all intents and purposes, I killed me. I was strapped down on a bed in the old Los Angeles County Jail, 128 pounds of bright yellow. I'd had 2 years doing to me everything I wanted to do to me with as much money as I needed to do it with. And there was a medical doctor standing at the foot of my bed telling me I was going to die. That was his message to me. Son, you're going to die. There's nothing we can do for you. That did not seem like a bad idea to me, if you want to know the truth. I was tired of doing the things I was doing. I never wanted to look in my mother's eyes ever again. I never wanted to see that hate and contempt that she had for me as she sat across the gravesite for my baby brother while I stood there with two handcuffed between two detectives. I never wanted to ever wake up at 2 or 3 o'clock in the morning with those nightmares of my mother staring at me with that hate. I never wanted to see the faces of the people I was about to commit something on or do something to. I never wanted to hear those pains and screams, terror. I never wanted to ever do that ever again. But I don't know any way to live without doing it. So when the man told me I was going to check out, it seemed like a good idea to me. It seemed much, much more beneficial than going on and doing what I was doing, because I know what's going to happen if I get up out of that bed. I know. I don't have any hopes of ever changing anything that I got. I'm going to go to the penitentiary, and I'm going to get out of the penitentiary, and I'm going to get back in the gang, and I'm going to start doing the things that I've done all my life. I don't know anything else, and I don't know anybody else who'd ever done anything different. So I don't know. I know what's going to happen. So that seemed like a better idea. I didn't want to do that anymore. So I laid there day after day, and after a period of time, the doctor kept coming in there. After a period of time, in the middle of the night, I screamed out the only prayer I ever said in my life. I said, "Oh, God, help me." Now, there was no blinding flashes of light. Nobody come running down the hall with a dozen donuts saying, "We got an AA meeting down there." I just went to sleep for a little while, and I started to get better and better and better. And 2 weeks later, 2 short weeks later, I'm up running around the jail looking for some more of the poison putting me back in the bed I just gotten off of. Back of my mind, just like it is tonight. I know what makes the big hurt go away. Sits there, waits. I know. Get me in a bad place. Get me acting badly. Get me doing things that are not quite kosher. Get me cutting corners. Get me lying to my sponsor. Get me doing this. Make me cut back on meeting. Maybe quit doing the book. Maybe quit sponsoring people. Blah, blah, blah. It goes on and on and on. And the thought will come back, "Well, you're not alcoholic anyhow." You know, my grandmother, God lover prayed for me every day of her life. My grandmother loved me. My grandmother was the only example that I ever had in my life of what could be. My grandmother's vision, my vision of what a Christian person should be. And I never could live up to what my grandmother wanted me to be. The last time I saw my grandmother, she kneeled at my bed in a manager's clinic in Topeka, Kansas, praying for me. Now, I'm not going to stand here and tell you my grandmother's prayer didn't help. I'm not going to stand and say my grandmother's prayer didn't keep me out of harm's way at all. But I can tell you something I know for a fact. It wasn't until I asked God for help that I could ever possibly get it. Something had to happen to me that separated me from every single thing to make me scream out in that moment of whatever it is that happens to people like me. I didn't get sober and stay sober, but that's what brought me to the meetings of alcohol. I know that as well as I'm standing here. And I didn't come here to get sober. I came here to run into you. You fascinated me. I couldn't figure out what you were doing. I sat in the back row and made fun of you. I didn't know what Alcoholics Anonymous was. I was as physically sober when I came to my first meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous as I am right now. I've always been physically sober when I sobered up. I didn't know what it was. I sit there in the back row of this meeting. I don't know what's going on there. And I'm watching you. I'm staring at an answer that I had sold my soul for. But I don't recognize the answer because I don't know what my problem is. It's hard to seek the answer to a problem if you don't know what it is. And I'm staring at this thing. I don't know what it is. And I'm sitting in the back row and I'm making fun of you. It took me a long time to realize how very sick that is. Here I am. I'm sitting in the penitentiary. I don't know when I'm going home. And I'm making fun of people who are leaving in an hour. There's something wrong with that somehow or other. But how would I know? How would I know? I never saw people like this before. I'm a taker. Takers don't hang out with people like that. I'm looking at people who are giving a little just for the hell of giving. I don't understand that. Takers do not understand givers that can hang out with them. They just hang out with takers. That's why they're all losers. They just have to keep going from taker group to taker group. And pretty soon, if you're like me, you'll even run out of people to take from. Then all you're left with is you. And if you're an alcoholic of my type, there's only one or two things that come into your mind. Die. Let me out of it. I can't take it no more. I've heard that time and time and time and time again. The alcoholic who can't stand to be sober and he can't stand to be drunk anymore, his next thought is kill himself. Most amazing thing that I know of. What you confused me with when I was new in Alcoholics Anonymous is very simple. I sit in the back row of meetings of Alcoholics Anonymous when I was new. And people would get up at podiums like this. And they would say things like, I used to drink. Now I don't drink anymore. And everything is just wonderful. Now back there in Inventory Point where I'm sitting, that don't look like much. See, I'm saying, I'm as physically sober as you are, Buster, and I'm crazy. God, I wish I was alcoholic, I used to say. If I could just be alcoholic, then all I'd have to do is not drink, and I would be okay. But I'm not alcoholic. Because these people who say they're alcoholics have quit drinking, and their life is better. I have quit drinking, and I'm crazy. Now, I'm wanting to kill the guy sitting next to him if he looks at me, crew. You know, I want to attack a guard to go back to Folsom somewhere. That's my thought process. I'm not sleeping at night. That's not being sober. I don't want to be sober. That's the reason. And what I'm trying to do, unbeknownst to me, because I hadn't gotten into the book, I was trying to identify a problem with alcohol with an illness called alcoholism. The book refers to my illness as a spiritual illness, a malady of a spiritual nature. And isn't it ironic that the only thing that will give us any kind of peace whatsoever is called a spiritual awakening? Why would you have to have a spiritual awakening if you just had a disease? If you have a spiritual illness, you need a spiritual awakening. I didn't grasp that when I was new in Alcoholics Anonymous. took me a long time to understand that. And many hours of counseling with my sponsor and my papa to understand the very nature of my illness. It was driving me crazy. I sat in these meetings long enough that one day a man wandered into that meeting that I knew did 23 flat years in the penitentiary. And he stood at a podium of Alcoholics Anonymous and told me something I've never forgotten. It makes more sense to me right now than it did then. It'll make more sense to me tomorrow morning when I wake up than it does right now. He looked down where I was sitting, and I don't know whether he was looking at me or not. It seemed like he was. He said, "You don't have to live like this no more if you don't want to. You don't have to do it like this no more." Nobody had ever told me that. They'd been telling me since I was 9 years old that I shouldn't drink these things and swallow these things and smoke these things and shoot these things. But nobody ever told me how to live without doing it. They just said, "Don't do it." What was hard for me to understand is every time they told me that, I was as physically sober as I am right now. How many times I wanted to scream out at them, "Good God, doctor, don't you understand?" Because they don't. See, if you're not alcoholic, you'll never understand why I drink. But if you're not alcoholic, I'll never understand why you don't. I mean, have you ever listened to them sometimes? I mean, I had an older brother, dead now. My older brother, every once in a while, I used to try to get him drunk just so he'd accept me, I guess. Didn't mind the money, but he didn't appreciate me very much. I remember one time I took him out to drink. He had two drinks. He said, "I'm quitting." I said, "What for?" He said, "I'm starting to feel it." Okay. The last time I ever went on that exercise of futility with him was on a Friday night. I took him out to get him drunk, and he said, after two drinks, "I'm going home. I just got paid." That's good. He said, "What are you going to do?" I said, "I'm going to Mexico." He said, "You don't even have a car." I said, "I'm still going to Mexico." See, I don't understand that. He didn't understand me. I don't understand him. Thank God. I went up to this man after that meeting and I asked him a simple question. Probably the first honest question I'd ever ask anybody in my life, except get out of my way. I said, "How do you learn how to live?" I didn't know it at that moment. What I wanted to know is, how do you sleep all night long without something to help you? How do you sleep all night long? How do you keep them waking up at 2 or 3 o'clock in the morning with them cold sweats and them chills and them nightmarish figures in front of you that you've destroyed in your self-centered, self-seeking walk through life? How do you never have to look at your mother's eyes again and see that hate in there? How do you do that? That's what I really wanted, but I didn't know that because I hadn't been here yet. I just want to know how you learn how to live. He told me about the book called Alcoholics Anonymous. It says in the library, I said, "John, you go get the book. I'll go home and pray that you find some part of you in it." Went over there the next day in the prison library and stole the book, Alcoholics Anonymous, out of the library. Well, that's my M.O. I didn't want anybody to see my name written alongside of anything as lame as a thing called Alcoholics Anonymous. You got to understand, I got a big-time gangster reputation. I'm so hip, the balls of my feet tickle me when I walk. It just kind of... I invented that walk, that little bouncy thing. And I opened up the book. I snuck it into my cell, and when nobody was around, I opened up and started to read it. Now, I didn't read the book Alcoholics Anonymous or follow the instructions outlined in the book Alcoholics Anonymous to get sober and stay sober from that day to this day and live this good life. I opened up the book Alcoholics Anonymous screaming out the loser's theme song. "I'm going to do this and prove to you my case is different." The loser's theme song in Alcoholics Anonymous. "You don't seem to understand my case is different." And I started reading the book and things started. I read one time in the doctor's opinion when it talks about the phenomenon of craving in there. Now, I didn't understand that very well until I started to read it a little further and found out what it meant. And prior to that, I'd had a few opportunities in life because somehow or other I was given a body that... could have played Major League Baseball, I suppose. And while I was in a reform school in the San Fernando Valley, I was offered a scholarship to play baseball for the University of California, Los Angeles. I never got to UCLA to play baseball. And while I was in San Quentin in the state penitentiary in 1952, when I was 21 years old, I was offered an opportunity to play baseball for the St. Louis Cardinals. I never got to St. Petersburg, Florida to play baseball. I thought, right up until that very moment, that the reason none of these things ever happened is because I come from them drunken people. I came from them institutions and them ghettos that I lived in, them gangs I ran with, that I'd been raised in state institutions all my life and I didn't have a chance. I was a victim before victimization was popular. I wrote it to the death sentence, boy, I'll tell you that. That moment, I believe one thing happened to me. I believe that the reason I didn't go to UCLA and the reason I didn't play baseball for the St. Louis Cardinals is because I took a drink of alcohol. Period. That moment, I believe to the very depths of my soul, so it's been brought home to me to believe, that is the moment when I made my first step in the program of recovery. When I started to assume the responsibility for my own actions, that it was nobody's fault, not even alcohol's fault. I did it. I contributed. I committed the atrocities. I did the things. I drank the alcohol. I ran the streets. It was nobody else's fault. I believe that's the first step here in Alcoholics Anonymous after identification. I believe that is the first step towards recovery. I found myself sitting in a room with a man, doing what our program of recovery says is the fifth step. I heard myself say a very simple thing to this man. I heard myself say to him that I was an alcoholic. From way down inside of me, there came a freedom that I carry with me to this very instant. I've had it inside of me for over 47 years now. I know exactly what's wrong with me. Exactly. I'm an alcoholic, and I suffer from this illness called alcoholism. I'm not an alcoholic and anything. When I was an alcoholic and something or other, I separated me from you. I'm a little better than you, a little slicker than you, a little hipper than you, a little richer than you, a little poor, a little smarter, but I'm not like you. When I became just like you, or at least like the people who wrote the book and the people who come to see me, it became my great privilege to be allowed to practice the only program of recovery for alcoholics of my type. 4,000 years of recorded history. You know what blows my mind? I get to do it. I get to live this way. I get to go to meetings of Alcoholics Anonymous. I get to make coffee in meetings. I get to set up the chairs and take them down. I get to stick my hand out and try to help people. I get to do these kind of things. I get to try to help people through this program of recovery the way I was helped. That blows my mind. I walked out of the penitentiary on the 4th day of June, 1961. I didn't know anything about living in a world. I didn't have a Social Security card. I didn't have a driver's license. I never worked a day in my life. I didn't know what it was like to have a checking account. I didn't know what it was like to pay a bill. I didn't know what it was like to do anything. I ran the streets. That's all I ever did. I took what I wanted, to hell with everything else. Something had happened to me. I, to the best of my abilities, until I could do it, the first 9 steps of our program of recovery were in play in my life before I came out of that penitentiary. And somewhere in there, a dream started to materialize that I never, ever thought would ever come to pass. A dream that maybe you would let me come and sit with you. Maybe you would give me the great privilege of coming and sitting in your meetings. Now, I never thought you ever would. I didn't think I was worthy enough to sit in the same room with you. I thought maybe you'd sit me out there in the lobby somewhere and pipe it out there to me. I didn't think I was worthy enough for anything. I didn't think I was good enough to ask anybody to be a sponsor. So I had to have somebody tell me they were going to be my sponsor. But I said to myself, if they give me the privilege of coming and sitting in their meetings, I'll do anything they ask me to do. Been my great privilege to be allowed to tell you that for over 46 years of my life, I have done practically everything that Alcoholics Anonymous has asked me to do. And you know what? I haven't been shortchanged on anything in life. Not at all. I haven't had to miss out on anything in life because of my involvement in Alcoholics Anonymous. Not at all. And all I want to do is come and sit with you and do what you tell me to do. I was in a meeting one night, the old East Bay group in Long Beach, and a man walked up to me that I knew, a guy by the name of Norm Alpe, and told me he was going to be my sponsor. I didn't ask him. He said, "I'm going to be your sponsor." I said, "What do you want me to do?" He said, "Well, I'm going to help you get things done that need to be done." I said, "Okay, what do you want me to do?" He looked at me kind of funny. He said, "Why do you ask me?" I said, "For Christ's sakes, Norm, you just told me you were going to be my sponsor." He said, "Johnny, if I can't run my life, what makes you think I can run yours?" Then I said, "Then what am I supposed to do then?" He said, "Why don't you just do what I do?" I said, "Okay, what is it you do anyhow?" He gave me the great answer, the mystery of sponsorship. He said, "Well, Johnny, if you do what I do, then you'll know what I do." I just broke up the great mystery of sponsorship to you. Call monkey see, monkey do. You just have to pick out the right monkey. Now, I'm cautioning you. There's a lot of people running around here wearing monkey suits ain't monkeys. They tell you all kinds of stuff. "Oh, you don't have to do that. You don't have to take them steps. You don't have to go to them meetings. You don't have to be there early and stay late. You don't have to get nobody. You don't have to do nothing. Just don't drink if your ass falls off." They wear monkey suits. They ain't monkeys. They're killers. They're alcoholics. So I said to him, he said, "Well, the first thing you should do is get a job. You're a bum." I said, "I'm not a bum, Norm. Don't say that to me." He said, "What are you?" I said, "I'm an AA member." He says, "You're an AA bum. Bums don't work." He says, "You might as well get off of welfare, too." I said, "Don't you ever say that to me, Norm Alpe. If you ever say that to me again, I'm going to hurt you. I'm not on welfare. I've never been on welfare." He said, "What do you call living in penitentiary? Self-supporting through your own contributions?" You can't argue with that. So I got a job, went to work. You know somebody stole my first paycheck? I'll tell you. If I'd have caught that guy, you'd have another speaker here tonight. I'll tell you that. I got all through. And the mother of my children was sitting there having a cup of coffee. I'm ranting and raving and doing my normal thing. "I'm going to kill the SOB. I'm going to catch that." Yeah, you are when you're really spiritual. You know what I mean? Just wanted to strangle somebody. And she looked at me and gave me one of them. "Andrew," she said, "now you know how it feels." I wasn't ready for that kind of stuff. Nobody screams like a thief when they get stolen from. Nobody. Trust me. You know why I went back to work that afternoon? I've been working ever since then. And I haven't had to miss out on anything. Nothing. Oh, I can't tell you every meal I've eaten has been a banquet, and every day I've lived out there on the sunny side of the street. No, my old ego gets me in trouble all the time. That's why I need a sponsor that's stronger than my head. Why I need a sponsor that I sit with and talk to and ride with. Because my head's my problem. I've been sober a long, long time. A lot of things sink in there, your head, try to run your life. I never will forget. I couldn't drive a car because I didn't have a driver's license. I didn't see how that's changed anything. He said, "How long have you had a driver's license?" I said, 1948. He said, "When are you going to get one?" I said, "The end of my natural life." He said, "Well, you won't drive a car for then." And I just looked at him. I said, "I've never been arrested for driving a car on a revoked license. Wanted to a couple times just to get a little break the line." He always had an answer for me whenever I started to buck up, and it still hangs in my head today. Whenever I start to question my sponsor's direction, there's a little thing that Norm used to tell me that I said, "Why do I have to do this?" He says, "You want the best reason?" I said, "Yeah." He says, "You may drink if you don't." That ended every conversation or every debate I've ever had with my sponsor. Everyone. Norm died, dropped dead, the day before my 22nd birthday. And I was kind of lost and wandering around for a while, to tell you the truth. I was like a big part of me had cut out, and my papa was sick, and I didn't know what to do. And wandering around, I'm sponsoring a lot of guys. I'm going to a lot of meetings. I'm getting information from people. Well, you know, blah, blah, blah. One day I found myself sitting in my sponsor's office, and I'm going over a situation that I'm involved in, I'm trying to get out of. It wasn't anything. It was a situation that I wasn't pleased to be involved in. And I asked him the answer to this question, and he gave me the same answer that I had already implemented. And I thought, I really don't need a sponsor if you got all the answers. And I turned to walk out of his office, and I swear, I thought about it tonight at dinner. I stood at the office, and I turned to that office. I can still see it now. I felt a chill go down my back. I looked at him, and I said, you know what, Clancy, I need a sponsor. He reared back in his chair and put his glasses down. I thought he was going to say, what an order. I can't go through with it. That's what I wanted him to say, because I'm such a hot shot. He says, okay, let's give it a try. I said, what do you want me to do? He said, well, why don't you try calling me every day, and why don't you come to the Wednesday night meeting? It's okay. Been 24 years now. I still call him every day. I still go to the Wednesday night meeting. I still have a job at the Wednesday night meeting. I make the coffee. The guy said to me the other day, how come you still call Clancy every day? And I said, you haven't told me not to yet. It's that simple with me. See, Alcoholics Anonymous to me is that simple. It really basically is that simple. You know, I put my life in somebody's hand, and I trust them to guide me through these dark, narrow places that I put me into. You know, like, I'm 6 or 7 years sober, and the mother of my children committed suicide. I don't know how to handle that. I don't know how to handle anything. You do. You came. You put your arms around. You walked me through that. I had these two little girls. I don't know how to raise kids. I'm a boot and shoe street punk. I don't know anything about raising children. You do. You showed me how to do things like that. You set up my knee. You told me to go to work. Everything will be taken care of. Go to work. Go to your meeting, Johnny. Everything will be taken care of. All this kind of stuff. So you just go to a meeting. Do what you're supposed to do. Go on your panel. Go talk to people. Sponsor people. Do this. You know, it's never been a bad piece of information in all these many years. As long as I'm going to meetings of Alcoholics Anonymous and I'm involved in Alcoholics Anonymous and this magnificent fellowship of recovery, as long as I've been involved, I don't seem to have any type of problems. If I have problems, I step up my meetings. I don't back off and go in the closet and think about them. I told Clancy that one time. He said, why don't you take your gun in there with you? That'll solve a lot of things. It's true. I give him credit for tonight, but I don't do that when I give that to my babies. I'll tell you that. Alcoholics Anonymous, I've been blessed. I really have. I want to tell you this because it means so much to me. I've had three of the most magnificent human beings in my life in Alcoholics Anonymous that a clown like me could have. And they've all meant more to me than anything. The first one was my Papa Chuck. When I asked him how come I was sober, he says, because you act like one of God's kids. And I said, well, what do God's kids act like? He said, they help people get things done that need to be done. They do it for free, and they do it for fun. Amazing thing to me. Now, my first sponsor, Norm Alpe, who I had for 22 years, was a man like that. He did everything for free or for fun. For free, and I loved him dearly. My Papa Chuck, until the last moment he was alive, was like that. Everything was for free and for fun. The greatest blessing in my life that I have ever had since I've been sober is that I got to take care of that old man a little bit the last year that he died, that he lived. One of the blessings that I will cherish me until the day they hit me in the face with a scoop. And now for the last 24 years, I have a man in my life by the name of Clancy who does everything in Alcoholics Anonymous that I can possibly think of and things that I can't do. Nobody in this world watches Clancy any closer than I do. I find no fault with him. I find no fault whatsoever. The reason I find no fault with him is because I watch him do the things that direct people like me to a life that's beyond my wildest imagination. I can't imagine, although I get to do it, I can't imagine the extent that he gets to see what I get to see a lot. I get to watch people return from the land of the living dead to the land of the living. I get to watch him walk in here broken and bruised and lost and lonely. I get to watch the light of this magnificent program of recovery come onto their lives and watch their lives change. The only reason I can recognize this happening to anybody else is because it's happened to me. That's the only way. The book has a tremendous, it says, I cannot transmit something I don't have. I cannot recognize the change in other people if there hasn't been a change in me. It's basically that simple. I cannot watch this magnificent thing called Alcoholics Anonymous settle into a group of people and watch them surround their lives around this magnificent program of recovery called Alcoholics Anonymous. I cannot recognize this, but it hasn't happened to me. It's an amazing thing, what I've been given. So is it any wonder, any question, why it's never a chore for me to go to meetings of Alcoholics Anonymous? Why it's never a chore for me to do anything in Alcoholics Anonymous? I've been given so much. I've been given a great deal. I haven't just been not drunk for a period of time. I've been given the ability to sleep all night long without nightmares. I've been given the ability to have a God of my very own. I've been given some type of a deep-seated love for this fellowship and the people who are close to me in it. I didn't bring that to Alcoholics Anonymous. Your example showed me where it was and promised me that it'd come about. I don't know a lot about a lot of things, but I can tell you. I live today in a life that is really hard for me to understand. I'm married to a woman that I absolutely and totally adore. I adore. She's Irish, she's blonde, and she's alcoholic. And she's got a bunch of goofy women that follow her all over the place. I love A, and most of all I love his people, because you're the reason I am. Every living thing I have in my life I owe to Alcoholics Anonymous. Everything. Everything I may ever hope to have in my life, I will to Alcoholics Anonymous. And dear friends, you better believe this. It is a long, long walk from a cell in solitary confinement at a maximum security penitentiary to where I stand right now. But for the grace of God, AA, and good people like you, I could have missed it all. Thank you very much.